I want to start by saying a big thank you to all of our readers this morning, especially to the readers for the Acts reading. It's one of my favourite traditions we have in this church, is hearing the good news of Pentecost proclaimed in the many languages that make up this beautiful congregation, this beautiful church family that we have together. Thanks to each of you. It's just another, I don't know about you, it feels to me like just another sign of God bringing us back together and reminding us of our shared life together. I've been listening to some new podcasts lately, and one I've listened to for a while is White Coat Black Art. I don't know if you ever listened to this one. It's a CBC podcast, one of my favorites. And they've had a few episodes lately that are recordings of counseling sessions with people, they know about it, it's with their permission, people talking about coming out of this time of the pandemic over the last 2 years. So talking about the challenges of dealing with the anxiety and the stress that has been in our lives for the last 2 years and that continues to be a part of our world. And one of the statistics really jumped out at me. I was just listening on the way in this morning. And this is a Stats Canada statistic, and it's from last year, but I think it's still relevant. The statistic is in two parts. First, that a quarter of all Canadians say they are experiencing high levels of stress on most days. And that half of all Canadians say that they have experienced higher stress now than before the pandemic. That probably doesn't sound surprising. That sounded about right to me. But something about hearing it in that form really struck me this morning. I think I've always imagined myself as quite a relaxed person. I'm a second child, which gives me the benefit of being a bit more go with the flow than a first child. Not easily worried, sleep pretty easily, thankfully. And I think I've had the luxury and the privilege, frankly, of living my life with a minimal anxiety. And then we had a baby in a pandemic. And we bought our first house, and I changed careers. And it made me realize that maybe the lack of anxiety or the presence of anxiety was more about what was going on and less about me as a person. Because I do think that some level of worry and concern is kind of part of being human. It certainly feels that way. And perhaps it's some natural outcome of the combination of really caring about our lives, caring about the people around us and our communities and our work, but realizing that there are so many things we don't have control over. I think we've all been living in a heightened state of anxiety and stress over the last couple of years. And for many of us, that has extended into our church life. So as the weeks and months of the church being closed to in-person worship rolled on at the beginning, I'm sure that many of us had a similar wonder and question. What will this prolonged separation from one another mean for us as a community? What will things look like when we do return? Will we know how to be a community together again? And it would be understandable if we still felt a bit of anxiety about this, I think. And maybe even a bit of grief for everything that we've lost, all the opportunities that we didn't have to be together in the last 2 years. And maybe there's a mixture of anxiety and grief in other areas in your life right now, as we emerge from this strange 2 years that I think has just added pressure to our work lives, to our family relationships, to our friendships. And you might think, what does Pentecost have to say to this situation? It's not a story that we typically associate with anxiety. But actually, I realized this week as I was reading our texts and praying with them that we have not just one, but two stories given to us in the lectionary today that are at least on some level stories about communities living out of a sense of anxiety. Anxiety about how to hold together as a community and about how God intervenes into those moments, how God responds to our anxiety. So our first story the second one we heard. The story of Pentecost is a story that we typically tell as a story being about the birth of the church. But it's also a story of a community that is in the midst of grieving. Grieving the loss of their rabbi, their teacher, their friend, and their Messiah. A community that is uncertain of what the future will hold for them. What would it mean for them to be a community now that Jesus was gone? And what did they really have in common with each other? A bunch of fishermen and tax collectors. People who may have been in their normal lives at odds with one another. And let's not forget that Jesus had been killed just weeks earlier. I wonder if they also feared for their own lives. It would be understandable, I think, for this group to feel like they had to pull together into themselves to survive, out of fear or uncertainty, to fall back on what they knew rather than to reach out into something new, to avoid others, to close themselves off from the world and to anyone who was different and who might challenge that sense of unity that they were trying to hold on to together. It would be understandable, given everything that had happened. But when God meets them, when God's Spirit descends on them, God breaks them open. God's Spirit is with them, and he comforts them, and he makes them into the community that they are going to be by opening them up to those around them, to one another, and to those outside their doors. God spoke to this community in their anxiety, and he broke them open so that they might hear the gospel proclaimed through one another. One Spirit and one proclamation, speaking through each of them in many voices. In their anxiety about the future and about what this community was going to be, God turned them to one another. Now, the text tells us that on this day of Pentecost, they were all gathered in one place. And earlier in the chapter beforehand, that's numbered at about 120 people. So that's kind of the size of the gathering we're imagining at this time. And it says that each one of them, all of them, was filled with the Holy Spirit. God spoke to them all and through them all. And this is further emphasized by the words that Peter chooses to say to the crowd from Joel, where it is proclaimed that God's Spirit will be poured out on all people, men and women, young and old, slaves and free. God's Spirit spoke to them all and through them all, even to the fishermen, even through the tax collectors. And their anxiety about the future and what their community was going to be, in that God turned them outward to those around them. On the day of Pentecost, when God's Spirit descended, all of them began to speak to the people who were gathering in their own languages. These were mostly immigrants, the text tells us, Jewish people who had come from all the corners of the earth to live in Jerusalem. But keep in mind that they did have a unified language that they could probably all speak. Greek was the language of the Roman military and the language of commerce in the Roman Empire. But the Spirit did not choose to speak the good news through the church in the language of the empire. The Spirit speaks to these outsiders of the good news of the God who took on flesh in their own languages, through words rooted and embedded in their own cultures, through languages that they learned from their mothers and their fathers as children. One Spirit, one proclamation, through a diverse people in many voices. And this opening, this turning to one another and seeing God in one another, each one of them, and this turning, this movement of proclamation and hospitality, this is the moment that we now look back to as the moment in which the early church was born. God meets them in their anxieties, in their desires to turn inward, to isolate out of fear or grief or anxiety, and he turns them to one another, and he turns them outward, and the church is born. Robert and William and I were lucky enough to have a few days away earlier this week. We went to Waterton and we stayed at the Prince of Wales because it was Robert's birthday. It was so fun. And Will, who's like exploding with his words right now, picked up some new words and new phrases. He's just almost 20 months old. And so some of the words and phrases he repeated over and over and over again were more chandeliers, please, because he liked the chandeliers in the Prince of Wales. Very useful phrase, I think you'll agree, for once he's come home to our house. And the other phrase he said a lot was big ram up high on the rock, because we went to the visitor center, which is wonderful, by the way, and there's all these animals everywhere inside and outside the visitor center. And he loved it. We went there every day. And there's one bighorn sheep that's up on a rock, kind of like really high up looking over. And every time he went in, he'd look up and he'd say, "Big ram, way up high on the rock." And he said it over and over again. And it struck me on the way home that no one who was not with us would understand what he's saying with both of these phrases. At daycare, they're going to be very confused. Because he's at that stage where he's talking constantly, but it's kind of hard to understand what he's saying if you're not with him all the time. It kind of sounds a bit like nonsense if you're new to him. But Rob and I can understand him most of the time. Not because he speaks more clearly with us, and not because we have a unique ability to interpret toddler speak, but because we've spent time together. We have a shared experience. Helps us to understand what he's saying. The Tower of Babel is a curious story. I'm aware that I might say that differently. The Tower of Babel is a curious story. It comes early in Genesis. It's part of the prehistory of the Hebrew Bible, those stories and accounts that tell us what it means as Jewish and Christian people to be a human being, living in the world, a world created by God. So we have the creation accounts in Genesis 1 and 2, the fall, the story of Cain and Abel, Noah and the flood, and then we have the Tower of Babel. And following the flood, all of the human beings in the world speak one language. Of course they do. They've all come from the ark. And as they start to make bricks and mortar and the people are multiplying, they decide to build a city and build a tower that would reach up into the heavens. And they say, "Let us make a name for ourselves, an identity, a meaning, a reputation," and then hear the anxiety in the motivation for this. "Otherwise we shall be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. Otherwise, how can we be a community together?" And in response to this, God confuses their language so they can no longer understand one another. And their fear is realized. They are scattered across the earth. Now, this story is often told as a kind of precursor to Pentecost. God sees humanity's hubris and pride, their attempts to make a name for themselves on their own terms, to build a tower to reach up to the heavens, and he thwarts this plan. He punishes them, making them speak many languages so they can't understand one another, and scattering them apart from one another. At Babel, one language becomes many. And then at Pentecost, God redeems humanity. Now, with the presence of the Holy Spirit, and as they proclaim the good news about Christ, they can speak to one another and understand one another again. But something about this way of putting the story together doesn't quite connect the dots for me between Babel and Pentecost. To start with, at Babel, one language becomes many. But at Pentecost, many languages don't become one. Quite the opposite happens, actually. God does bring people back together again in understanding, but not in one language. Once again, there is a unified community, breaking out and speaking in multiple languages, not one. And if you look at the Genesis text, this idea that God is punishing the people by making them speak many languages is also questionable. Nowhere does it say that this is an act of God punishing them. Let's listen to what God actually says in this story. Look, they are one people, and they all have one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. Nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. So as one people speaking one language, the people will be able to do anything they can conceive of. We might think that's a good thing. God appears to think otherwise. What happens when one people are able to do whatever they might conceive of? When one people have that much power? We don't have to look far in our history or in our current day to see examples of peoples, of nations, of races who have had too much power, who have been able to do anything they propose. And for many of us here, and certainly for this church, this has been part of our story. It is part of our story, a story that we are still learning to tell and that we are still reckoning with today. So this people who want to reach up to God without also reaching out into the world are stepping into a way of being human that God does not want for them. And so, I think, in an act of grace, not an act of punishment, in an act of grace and ongoing creation, God confuses their speech and he spreads them out to form many communities, not one. This multiplicity, this diversity and difference is not a punishment, it is a gift. And this is the truth that is confirmed at Pentecost. God speaks to all of them, men, women, young and old, slave and free. And God proclaims the good news of Christ through them to all those who are gathering, not in Greek, not in the language of imposed unity, but in their own languages. And it is this truth, the same truth, that we have had proclaimed to us today in our beautiful reading this morning. The truth that our diversity, our multiplicity, our differences from one another, even those differences that can make it hard to be in one community together, all of this is God's gift to us. Because we were not made to be alone or to be on our own or to only be with those who are like us. To see and hear God only through those who look like us and speak like us and think like us. God's plan is greater than that, and it's harder than that, and it's more rewarding. Because when we are turned to one another with the expectation that we will hear God and we will meet God in and through each one of us, then we are becoming the community that God is calling us to be. And when our attention is turned outward to those outside of our walls, not with a desire to make them like us, to make them speak like us, even worship like us, but with a true hospitality that welcomes them, that shares good news in their own language, a hospitality that welcomes them in all their difference with all the gifts they bring, then we are becoming the community that God is calling us to be. Come, Holy Spirit.